Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Ammo Art Chat. This evening, we'll be talking with Peggy Kroll Roberts, and we'll be talking about breaking creative blocks, along with some other things that Peggy is very passionate about. We've had a little bit of a couple email exchanges about what she wanted to talk about, and we pulled some questions together based on that, and I think it's going to be a great show for all of you this evening, hopefully filled with lots of great advice that you can take back to your studio and start creating with. With me this evening is my co-host, Blanche McAllister-Harris. Hello, Blanche. How are you?
Hey, Linda. I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm doing pretty well. You've been painting or anything lately?
I have. I've been busy just trying to keep my galleries supplied with work and working on, some photos that I had taken back out in Taos over the summer, working on some pieces from that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, when you were out at Kevin's workshop.
Yeah. I took lots of wonderful reference photos and did a lot of plein air painting out there, so I'm enlarging some of those into studio-sized paintings. So that's been keeping me busy. How about you?
Great.
What have you been doing?
I haven't been doing too much because I wiped out on my bike, as I told you, in the green room. so the wrist is pretty damaged right now, my right wrist. So been doing a number of other things to catch up, but did win third place in one of the shows around here, so very happy about that. My painting of the Ernst Wall, which was the steamer that goes up and down Lake Waikatipu in New Zealand, that one took third place. I was very happy about that, so got me kind of recharged to go back out and paint. So I just also quickly just want to talk about, naturally, part of the other things I do is line up shows for Ammo Art Chat. So wanted to talk about November and what's coming up. We're going to actually have a show on November 14th. It's part of the Representational Art Conference series that we're doing. That one is actually it's a really interesting show because we talk about the new media's role in representational art in the 21st century. And on that show are two folks that are using today's technology, media technology, if you want to call it that, to talk about art. One is John Seed from the Huffington Post, and the other one is Deanna Piawati from Combustus. Two very different art bloggers. One of them has, a massive, following, if you will, because of Huffington Post, and the other one is just in Oregon. So it's interesting listening to their different views on what the media effect is on representational art today. So that'll be interesting to listen to. And then on November 21st, Jeffrey Watts will be coming back from his trip to Tibet and Nepal, and he's going to come on the show and talk to us about his online school and his recent trip and all of that good stuff. So I actually have to get in touch with Jeff. I know we'll be talking about his online school he just launched, but there will probably be a number of other things that we'll also talk about. But most importantly with us tonight is Peggy Kroll Roberts, as we said. So I want to bring her in here quickly. So I want to read her bio in case folks aren't familiar with Peggy, which I would assume that most of our listeners are, but bear with me while I go through this. About the artist, we've got award-winning artist Peggy Kroll Roberts with us this evening, and she was trained at the Arizona State University and the Art Center College of Design in Pasadena, California. Peggy worked as a fashion and advertising illustrator before making the transition into fine art. Using intense color and value to accentuate her subject, she moved into fine art with a bold palette, a love for small paintings, and a very loose style that achieves a lot with very few energetic brushstrokes. She prefers to suggest reality rather than render it. Inspired by her childhood, she paints beach scenes and other aspects of their lives. She also breaks away from the conventional still life by painting scenes of cosmetics and the occasional coffee cup or slab of butter. Peggy's works give us a new appreciation of our own daily life. So, Peggy, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm excited.
We're very excited. Yeah, we're very excited that you're here. So thank you for taking your time. I know you're a very busy person, so we'll actually talk at the end of the program and give you an opportunity to talk about some things that you have coming up. But let's jump right into our first topic, which happens to be your passion for teaching. And just tell us first about your teaching opportunities, workshops, what you tend to teach to the folks that come to your workshop, what you focus on. You know, if I'm an artist, I've been to a number of workshops. Kind of tell us what's different about your workshop, if you can.
Well, I don't know how much different my workshops may be from others. You know, I've certainly taken workshops myself in the past, and I've been teaching for, oh my gosh, over 20 years. But I take it very much to heart. When I mm-hmm. get a group of people who are trying to share simply share my knowledge with and how to apply it, I really struggled with that at first in my first couple of workshops, getting my feet wet. And then as I became more experienced, I just really listened to students, tried to be in touch with their sensibilities, their aesthetic senses, and one thing I noticed was just a real lacking in the knowledge and application of values and mm-hmm. the vocabulary we all use every day to communicate with each other or read, you know, we read in art books or communicate in a workshop. And so I decided to create lessons, because what these lessons helped is in any painting, you encompass it all, and it's easy to lose track of what was out in front, what maybe inspired you. And so I really honed in on that and created lessons that kept at least one specific goal in front, which helped to have everything else fall into like little ducks in a row. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you know, I just kept seeing these, you know, out of control value, not organizing it, a need for drawing skills, things like that. But again, as I said, most importantly, value. So I really tried to create lessons showing the power of value, as I've tried to create lessons showing the power of drawing, all the fundamentals. So, for example, we may take the same exact subject and paint it two or three times and first interpret it in two values, then three. But what happens with that is with the student, that's always out in front. They're still drawing. They still have to, then color has to fall in line to that one guideline that's out there. Okay, same great. Thing for surface quality. You know, people struggling with just getting to know the paint or being afraid of it. And I certainly didn't create it, but I introduced the, limited strokes. Or things like, I don't, you know, for example, like just paint, but the goal you have to keep out in front, say, is keep your darks thin and your lights thick. So with everything falling into place after that, it just made a huge difference in helping people grasp. It just kind of kept them a little safety net, a little bit of a safety net, without trying to control their aesthetic senses, because I really have a huge respect for their personal aesthetic senses. That's the one thing you have to nurture and respect. Otherwise, you're not going to find your own voice. So that's kind of, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go right ahead. I was just agreeing with you. So.
Oh, okay, so that's how my teaching has evolved, and I've been able to just create new lessons as I get new problems to solve for these artists searching for answers. And I just, not only that, that's, you know, when we get to talking about breaking creative blocks, this is the very thing I was going to speak of that can help me through blocks. And I've had plenty and plan to encounter more.
Oh, yeah. Well,
as we all do.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting when you were talking about value, because I also teach at a local art center, and it's always interesting to me that, and because it's easier, it seems easier as we start out as beginners to make a value change than it is to make a color change within a value area.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that's so key to understanding the painting process.
Yeah, that's, you know, we're so excited about color, but even color has to be organized. Say if you want to pump up the chroma on a painting, you can't leave something behind. You have to, I explain to students as far as creating a arrangement of values. You know, you think of it as playing a chord on a piano, and maybe you'd like to lighten the key up, and you just simply take that chord and play it an octave higher. The relationships don't change. The spacing is the same, but you've just shifted everything up on the value scale. Or if you want to make a darker statement, same with color. You know, you shift, you're just, it's so much like music. You just shift these chords around.
That's a great way to think about it, Peggy. That makes it sound so simple.
It is, and it's,
yeah,
it's such a mystery in the beginning. I certainly was there, and then as the light bulbs go off, I'm going, this was as easy as they were trying to tell me it was, and now I see why. But again, you know what that boils down to is just hard work.
Yeah.
You know,
just
can't not put in the mileage. The persistence is so important.
Yeah, it is difficult to learn how to keep your values together, keep everything in the same value in that shape.
It is, but the more you study the masters, and if you really look at analyze paintings, N.C. Wyeth is a perfect example. But if you really analyze these things, that it's the abstract value plan that is what's going to grab you from across the room and draw you into explore, and then you start to discover the half tones, the shadow core, the reflected light, any accents, because they're controlled so carefully within the main masses, they don't destroy that that value plan, that underlying structure, the foundation. So that's really important to creating a readable image.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then there's so much else that goes into it.
Yeah, once you master that, you only got to put, 150 more things that you have to master.
Yes, well, yeah, exactly. Yes. But I just find that if I have these, put out one or two goals in front, then everything has to relate to that. And it's certainly made it easy for me because, you know, I can get in a kitchen and have all the ingredients in the world, but without that cookbook, I am not a good cook at all. So yeah. I need that recipe, I call them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it's amazing how much confidence you actually begin to grasp when that light bulb does come on and you have your value plan and you're working within a value with all those colors, it's amazing how much more confident you get with your brush strokes because you know that color is that right value and it's staying in the right value plan. And I feel once that light bulb went off for me, I felt so much more confident. And you probably see it in your students as well in the workshop.
Yes, I do. I do. It's when they just have to focus on one main goal with the rest to fall in accordingly, I really see just these amazing results. I mean, many times you go, dang, I wish I would have painted that. It's a real security to work that way. And I don't think it's a, it just boils down to going in with a plan. You know, so many instructors say, start with a plan, do some sketches. That's exactly what it is defining a plan. Mm-hmm. Taking some of the mystery out of it.
Well, so you're both right. That makes it you so much more confident. You can your next stroke. You're not questioning all over the board. Out of a warm red or something, you know you have to hold it within that value. And
you know I feel the hardest part of painting is finding what to paint. Because you have got to be in touch with your inner voice. You know, I had a real epiphany in one of my first workshops that I took from transitioning from being an illustrator to pursuing painting as a full-time career and passion. And I realized what a huge obstacle that was for someone to find, because it's that inner voice that just defines you right down to your favorite colors, the type of clothes you wear, the arrangements you may have in your home, whatever it is. That's very hard for people to get in touch with and to trust, because it's a real easy trap to fall into and stay trapped as being a permission seeker, which means you're always seeking permission from someone else other than your own intuition, your own gut. I'd say that's one of the very hardest parts about painting.
Mm-hmm.
The rest, I think, can
yourself.
Be easily learned and improved with mileage. But to constantly nurture and be in touch with that inner voice, I'm bombarded all the time with beautiful paintings, other images by other artists, and we go to museums, and suddenly I come out and I'm all confused, and yet I go back to that epiphany. Remember how I heard that voice, and that changed my life, and I can get back into it. But
great advice.
It's a deadly trap. It's a very frustrating trap.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing trying to break through. So anyway, but it was a fantastic experience for me, and I just thank my lucky stars I did experience it.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, I was beating myself up that whole morning. The whole week was just there were all these guidelines, very safe environment. All of a sudden we had to go out and paint. Well, we've been told what to paint all week. And so this is a new experience for me.
Going, it's just too wide open.
Yeah, too wide open, and that's something I had to start, had to learn and nurture. So anyway, that's another thing why it's important to me as a teacher to try and get in touch with these people's aesthetic senses, whether they respond more to linear shapes or they respond more to main masses. It's just all sorts of things. So I hope that.
Yeah, I was just sitting here thinking that I think that's a little, I mean, that would be a huge difference, I think, between you and someone else, Peggy, because I'm sitting here thinking of the workshops that I've been to, nobody's actually looked at my work and said that to me. So now you got me interested.
Yeah,
that's a great way to look
okay.
at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's just really trying to find someone's, get in touch with their personality. There's so many formulas out there, and people think, oh, if I could just paint like so-and-so, or if I could just, it's never going to happen. It's never going to happen because no two people are alike, and you cannot get into their intuition. You just have to nurture yours and hear that voice. It's not easy to do. Sometimes you can hear it immediately. Sometimes it takes you maybe an hour to hear, especially if you're in new subject matter territory. It's a lot harder then, but you can do it.
Yeah. Paint like yourself and not like other people, or don't try to paint like other people do.
Right. Well,
it's never going to work.
There's, all the wannabes out there. It's hard, and it's scary to try and break free of that because you watch other people's success, but you have to just, you really have to honor yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm stubborn that way.
Good.
Let me ask you another question. On your website, you list recommended reading for artists, which is great. I love to have a reading list. The books are, they include Edgar Payne's Composition for Outdoor Painting and Carlson's Guide to Landscape Painting, The Art Spirit. Hawthorne.
Yes.
Just the classics that we all love. Let's take a few minutes to talk about composition. Three out of the, I think, six or so books you recommend are about composition.
Yes.
Not so important.
It's all about design.
Mm-hmm.
The design of that dark light pattern, and there are guidelines. The design of the intensity. You may have a value pattern. You also need a chroma pattern. And the way you draw angles. There's a lot of basics, but. And I don't have a lot of answers other than I know it's way up there because, and I get a little conflicted on that. I once worked for an art director that was, he talked about, I don't mind a weaker drawing, but the design has to hold. The design will hold a weaker drawing or a maybe not quite an appropriate typeface. And that really stuck with me. But when I teach, I also approach, I kind of have the fundamentals honed down to design, drawing, value, and color. And then there's all these subheads I list that are interchangeable. And surface quality can fall under design as far as maybe hard edges, things like that. But I also really trying to get in touch with the student as far as their aptitudes. Everyone talks about, talent and I refer to it as aptitude. And I really learned this from our own three children, seeing how they had at least a strong aptitude in at least one of those fundamentals. And I see that consistently in every one of these workshops. I see these students having a strong aptitude in at least one or two of those fundamentals. And so Tiger Woods, if you're hurting with your seven iron, that's what you have to get out and practice. So that was really for myself in that I feel I have a really strong aptitude in spatial relationship, what I have a very weak aptitude is in design. And, oh, I wish it was the other way around. So mm-hmm. I have to work so hard at design, and it still to this day doesn't come easy to me. And I just, I have friends. I'll sit there and think about one friend, and I go, oh, my God, this gal is – she's a genius at design. Now, please, would you work on your drawing? That's why it's all important, but I don't know. I've come to see design as just that notch that holds it all together.
Mm-hmm. I think composition is the most difficult aspect for me.
Yeah, it is for me, but I have to work very hard at it. I read books. I try to experiment. And, again, that's why thumbnails are so important. Using your viewfinder, things like that, all those little things can really help. And just try to avoid the obvious, centering things or dividing your canvas in half. Though I've seen all those things broken successfully. They're not easy to break. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, design, composition. I struggle with it, but I work at it continually.
Yeah. Well, that's good advice to work on what may not be your strongest area. Or the most pleasant area to work on, but you just need to work on it.
Yeah, it can
get
be painful.
Over time. Yes. Yeah.
And design is just. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna. I'm sorry, Peggy. It's my fault. I was thinking when I was reading your bio, and it talked about your fashion background and your illustrator's background, which I think is. You'd have to be very strong in design. So there's got to be a difference between that design and then designing a painting. Is that true?
Well, one thing, I don't know that there's not a difference. It's just as an illustrator, I had a safety net because all the companies, design firms, and agencies I worked for, you're working with an art director. So mm-hmm. it's a give and take, and you start with this safety net right away, and you're given these parameters. When you stand out in front of something and you go on to make all the decisions on your own, that's a scary place to be. And you've got this blank canvas in front of you, and now you're, whether it's a landscape and you're standing with all this information in front of you, what tools can you grab? How do you find something out of that to paint and make a great design? You have to think about your focal point, and is there one thing you can grab onto as a focal point? Did one thing you look at really excite you, and then you marry everything to that? You place that in the golden section, a strategic spot on your canvas, and play to that. Mm-hmm. So, and design, I will, all the time, I will put out there in front of me the one-third, two-thirds rule, whether it's dark or light, or gray and intense, or thick and thin, things like that. I try to just avoid that half and half quality.
Mm-hmm.
So that much that's I right. can offer as a design tool, but it's difficult for me, and I try to work at it really hard.
I think we all do. So we're
not all alone. Yeah, but I've seen many people with just a aptitude for it, and maybe they're maybe arranging values they're not so strong at. So,
mm-hmm.
but that's why I always go in saying I think there's room for everybody, as long as you get the fundamentals under your belt and get in touch with that inner voice. use them to express yourself.
Yeah, it is an interesting journey. Otherwise, so many of us wouldn't be on the journey to begin with. And it's amazing that, you know, for me, my journey, we started out as a hobbyist, or I started out as a hobbyist and decided I wanted to move into this, you know, from there, and not realizing how much was really there until I walked away from a pretty good paying job and decided to do this for full life, you know, full time. And it's just amazing to me that it's like, wow, if I would have known this before, I probably would have kept my job a little while longer. But
yeah, it's scary. Boy, we still can't believe we're, you know, I have brothers and sisters that have always gone the corporate path, and they must think I'm nuts. Just, you know, my husband Ray has been always that type to just assume there's a mattress out the window. I'm not quite that easygoing, but it takes a little bit of that to make a career of this, I think. And it's a passion, you know. It's like I couldn't do anything else. It's too important to me.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit, since we're talking journeys, let's talk a little bit about breaking some creative box. Blanche, why don't you go ahead and start us off on that conversation?
Okay. Well, we typically hear about writer's block, not being able to write. And I imagine there are a number of creative blocks for painters, from being in a rut or going all the way to not painting at all, or just becoming too intimidated by the things we just talked about. There's too much to think about, and it's hard to know where to start. Can you tell us about any blocks you've experienced or have seen?
Yes, I can. I have experienced plenty. I still experience them. But what I have figured out for myself personally is to give myself an assignment, that simply. And I just have been, you know, I've just really been going through those feelings like that just in the past couple years. You know, I get out in the studio and be frustrated with where, you know, kind of burned out, thinking, oh my gosh, do I hate to paint now? And just very frustrated with it. But and finding anything to take my mind off of this frustration. And what I decided to do was, well, what I realized first, what it wasn't fun anymore, what I was trying to say out in the studio. I was just trying to produce or meet someone else's vision, or you know, get, oh, this is due, and or I need to paint this subject for this, and it just became this meeting everyone else's needs, and which can just really became unfun for me. So what I did was, you know, I said, I got to do something about this. I said, I'm just going to go back to my roots, and that is I love to draw. I've always loved the fashion figure and just moving figures and, you know, flowing lines. And I said, you know, I'm just going to go sit at the table at night or during the day, whenever. I'm just going to put my oils off to the side, the subject matter I'm known for off to the side. I don't care. I'm willing to suffer the consequences because it was so deep within me. And I just go, oh, thank heavens the kids are kind of grown and on their own and, you know, self-sufficient, and because this would not be good timing if they were little. So I said, I'm just going to sit at the table and I'm just going to do line gouache drawings of the girls dancing. And then another period, for a whole winter, I sat and just did watercolors at the table. So I changed mediums, I changed subject matter, and I gave myself assignments. You just, I think you have to give yourself an assignment. And even to this day, if I'm feeling like, oh, what should I get? Oh, I got it. I should be doing this. I should be. And I just try to take a couple deep breaths and say, just, you know, you're not even going to touch anything today if you keep repeating that and you just don't give yourself one thing to do. And that has worked wonders for me. So I've been taking my gouache out, and I thought, we just got back from Italy, and I thought, oh, gosh, I'm going to have to do all these oil paintings, whatever. I've been loving my gouache so much. And I said, to heck with that. I'm going to, you know, I took my oils, of course, and did some oils, but I took my gouache with me, and it was so portable. I just walked and walked and just sat and painted whatever was in front of me because that was my assignment, and it made it so joyful. So joyful. So assignments, that's the answer to myself, and I'd say to anyone, is give yourself a very specific, defined project. Just, for example, okay, I'm going to take this piece of reference and I'm going to interpret it in two values and then once in three values. Or I don't want to work in oils. I'm going to get my just a pencil and go out and do simple contour drawings of whatever's in front of me. Just keep putting one foot in front of the other, and it'll rekindle what you were excited about in the past. I'm now starting to feel excited again about getting back down to the beach and painting figures at the beach again. I know it's kind of what I'm known for, but that's not all I can do. So
yeah. That's great advice. It's great. Sometimes it's intimidating just to get myself into the studio. You know, I don't know what I want to do, so I don't go out there and get started.
Oh, I hear you.
I just need to walk out there and get going, and giving myself an assignment is a great idea.
Well, and not only that, you have to, it's got to be fun. I don't, if I'm really struggling, I'm not, okay, I'm going to just, you know, I feel the pain enough as it is. Now if I'm feeling that this is just painful, I'm going, what would be really fun for me to do? And I go, I'm just going to go sit. I have hundreds of photos of my daughters just dancing in all these costumes I have. And I just sit and do one drawing after another in color and line, and I've just had so much fun with it. Not only that, I just created a small little market for it for myself. So that's, I think that's the best answer I can give. And I know another great answer, real quick, is as far as subject matter, because I got this from a gal who'd taken a workshop and had the experience with actually one of those professionals that help creative people become unblocked. And that piece of advice to a painter was title your painting first. And I thought, oh, my gosh, that is brilliant.
That's interesting. I never thought of that.
You know, if you're still doing into still lifes, or it was easy enough for me to not being able to, struggling with composition, titling my painting first, I thought, oh, my gosh, what a tool.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's an amazing thought.
Yeah, that's helpful as far as just composing and just getting a focus.
Mm-hmm. Narrowing it down a little bit.
And that goes back to being the hard part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great idea. I've never thought of that.
So I try to share that.
Yeah.
But that's,
a,
go ahead.
I just have a lot of respect for the folks that can meet the daily painting challenges. I tried really hard to do that, but all I felt was like I was trying to like hit a goal. You know, it's like, okay, I have to paint 30 paintings in 30 days, or I have to paint 100 paintings in 100 days, or I have to paint every day. I found that what I was doing was erasing getting in touch with my own voice, and people can argue with me that they did get in touch with their voice that way, but that particular assignment, if you want to call it that, didn't work for me.
And that's okay. Not all assignments work for everybody. You kind of have to define your own assignment.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So it's not so much that, you know, this assignment is for every day, because what you're saying is find something that makes you go past that block, and your way of doing it is with assignments.
An assignment doesn't have to be, okay, I'm going to paint every day for 30 days. That would work for some people, I'm sure, but my assignments for me personally, knowing myself and my own personality and I had to search out what was really joyful for me. I didn't make the assignment, you have to do this every day. It was just go do a little bit of this.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, then again, it's kind of searching out what works for you in the assignment department. But certainly that works for some and not others, and that's okay.
Right.
Well, I think it's wonderful to give yourself an assignment and do things that you enjoy, and then in the process of doing it, you're inspired all of a sudden to paint a painting or to get on with things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You get more inspired if you just get into it.
Yeah, you have to hope it comes, and if it doesn't, you have to keep trying, and sometimes the inspiration is there, sometimes you have to create it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just another fact of it. It's kind of like cleaning the house. It's like, or the kitchen. I find that if I can't do it, I go, just do a couple dishes, and all of a sudden I kind of feel inspired to finish it up.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I can try and find a way to create, you know, not waiting for inspiration, but creating it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Just getting started with it.
Yeah, yeah. And then it may not come, and I'll go do something else. So then I go, I'm going to go for a drive, or I'm going to go watch more Breaking Bad.
No.
But
everybody in the audience who watches Breaking Bad's ears just picked up. So
wow. Talk about a show. Anyway, but getting in touch with that inner voice is all about is what helps you be unique.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Any advice for finding that inner voice? I mean, it naturally, if we tie that to your assignment, you can make that your assignment, right? What is it that inspires you?
Yes, you can make a list, create your own little book. You know, I've created these little books, inspiration books, that I can refer to. It's simply like everything in, you know, you have the life organizers that say, start every morning with a to-do list. I generally do that. And, boy, it just helps me so much, whether, you know, kind of helps me put my day in order. And it's whether it's shipping something or having to run this errand or pick up this or paintings I want to do, something like that, or quick thoughts of, I've always wanted to do a painting of this. That to-do list to me is really important. But, oh, gosh, it's, you know, again, it can be frustrating, but it can also be very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a list, well, when I put things on a list, it's always satisfactory to check them off, as I've done them, and I feel very good about my day or whatever time period it is.
Yeah. It's very helpful. It's very helpful. I don't know if we have time. I don't know how much time is left, but I'd love to share that little epiphany story if there's time.
We have plenty of time, Peggy.
Yeah.
Okay, and this will help. This helped me. I've actually had two in my painting career, two true enlightenments. But, you know, the one I mentioned, I took a workshop many, many years ago, right in the transition of being an illustrator to trying to create a career as a painter. And as I said, as an illustrator, you have this safety net. It's a team effort with an art director, and there's some guidelines and subject matters. It's pretty much mapped out. You know, they certainly want your input. They've chosen you for your style. But in this workshop, again, it started out as a very safe, controlled setting, just mixing color charts the first day. Second day was just working on value. Third day was painting relationships of color. Fourth day, pretty much the same. And last day was all of a sudden, go out and paint. And I just felt this little panic rise up in me. Kind of, ugh. So we all run outside, and I've got my French easel, and I don't know what to paint. You know, it's out in this parking lot, and there's things you can find just about anywhere. Some it takes longer to find than others. But my first reaction was, I'm going to go over right by that group of people because they're painting trees, and I should paint trees. And first of all, they're like these not very attractive Palo Verde trees. This is when we lived in Arizona. I'm kind of feeling already like, but they know what I should be painting. And I just kind of started to slowly cave. So I picked up my easel. I said, you know, this isn't working for me. Oh, I'm starting to panic. And as I carry all this stuff across the parking lot, I just hear this inkling of, oh, I love those colors. But I ignore it. And I go on to this other group who decided to paint the water in the canal. And I'm going, okay, this is what I should be painting. They know what I should be painting, water and canal. People love paintings of water, water cells. I'm looking at it going, oh, okay, gray, blue, gray, green, gray, warm gray, cool, you know, just gray everywhere. And I'm starting to panic even more and going, oh, I can't, you know, why am I here? And I quick go, oh, this is not working. I've got to quick, God, everyone's working and they're doing this and I'm just here. I'm the only one, you know. So I see my friend Joan across the way and I go, oh, thank God. I'll go and paint next to her because she knows exactly what I should be painting. And I'm going to, and I told, pick up my easel. And as I'm walking across, I hear a little louder, gosh, I love those colors. I ignore it. I go next to Joan. Joan's painting flowers in a terracotta pot. And I went, I guess I should be painting flowers because flowers sell. I mean, everyone loves flower paintings. And I'm just, it's just, I am ready to go home by this time. And then I pick up my easel totally defeated and thought, oh, you know, that old saying, don't change horses in the middle of the stream, whatever. I'm just going to go back to the trees. I never should have changed. So many people are there painting the trees. And as I'm walking across the parking lot again, this voice screamed out to me, "I love those colors." And finally it screamed so loudly, it was amazing. And what it was, it was the colors of butter yellow, it was a butter yellow Cadillac, turquoise tinted windows, fresh asphalt, so the shadow, strong sunny day, so the shadow was this beautiful purple, up against this kind of dusty rose stucco building, an outdoor light fixture attached to the building, streaming this kind of lavender cast shadow down the side, a guy in a white shirt. And I thought, I think this is what I should paint. I thought, I've been dying to mix that butter yellow. I don't care if it's on a car or whatever. The arrangement of colors was just so delightful to me, and I stopped right there where I stood, did this painting, and it was just changed my life. Because
wow.
And this is the story I'll tell in just about every workshop, in this is what you have to look for, and this is what will set you apart. This not only applies to an arrangement of colors, but the way you apply paint, the whether you like a lot of soft edges or crisp edges, or would you rather glaze? Do you like a lot of broad dashing strokes? Are you a more controlled application type person? Do you favor the figure over the still life? This experience applies to everything, and it changed my life. So
that's wonderful. Yeah. That's just great to hear.
That's what I try to nurture in people and say, get to know the fundamentals. Now this is what you have to nurture.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy enough to
that's
learn values.
Apart. Yeah.
You know, values is light. Light is science. That's
mm-hmm.
that's not a that not that you know that falls on an object. Does the same thing on every object. You know, you've got the main source in light, main source in shadow. That doesn't change from object to object. So that's easy enough to learn. That's learning science. But that that inner voice, that takes constant nurturing too. Anyway, so I hope that helps some people. Because
okay,
I was ready to
that.
Have a meltdown.
Well, it's interesting because that's a kind of creative block, Peggy. I mean,
yeah,
you weren't listening to your inner voice. You were blocking it out
yeah.
the whole time.
I had been trying to paint whatever. I had, would so-and-so arrange it like this? Would so-and-so paint this? Would so-and-so apply the paint like this? It was a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And I just said, screw it. I'm going to do this.
Yeah,
it
attracts you.
Yeah, it's interesting because I started out painting. I've had a number of masters. And I started out painting with a brush. And it's just so funny because when I have a brush in my hand, all of what I was told is in my mind. I have to paint with a brush like this. But when I picked up palette knives, nobody told me how to paint with a palette knife, and I have so much more fun with palette knives because I haven't had people standing around me telling me how I should paint, and my
yeah.
inner voice comes out. So, absolutely.
Well, there you go. That's so wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I
may be able to pick a brush up later, but right now I'm enjoying my palette knives too much.
Yeah, that's, it's just what you respond to nurture,
mm-hmm.
I think. You know, if someone wants to paint with a palette knife the rest of their life, well, go for it. If you're having fun and you love it and you love your results and you love the journey,
mm-hmm.
sounds good to me. And what wonderful quality they have.
Right. Well, and it's amazing because some of the things that I want to do with a palette knife is a little bit different, than maybe what someone else would do with a palette knife. And I'm not saying that's anything. I'm sure what I'm thinking of has been thought of before. And I'm not saying I'm trying to be totally original. But, I always challenge myself when I have that in my hand, again, with assignments, with, you know, let's see if I can do this, you know. So
yeah.
That's a constant thing that's going on and keeps it fresh. And so that's it's just so amazing that time after time we hear, you know, similar things about get yourself out of the way. You know, don't worry about the painting that's going to sell. Don't worry about the subjects you should be painting because they sell all the time.
That's
good.
Right. Because,
yeah.
You know what's amazing? This painting sold right away. And I just thought, gosh, that's what an affirmation for me to have, you know, because you're afraid, oh, a painting of a car, or, yeah, it's like, I don't care. I have to mix those colors.
Yeah.
I have to. And, you know, it's, so that was a big affirmation for me and a big jump. So, yeah.
Cool.
Gotta pursue the passion in it.
This is a question I'm going to ask you, Peggy, that, well, we've probably already been over this, but if we look at all the paintings that are out there today, we see the same subjects popping up in the paintings. Any advice for breaking away from the same subjects, what has already been done or maybe overdone?
Well, God, it seems like it's all been done, doesn't it? You know,
yeah.
It's like beach painting, still lifes, landscapes, and yet who stands out? Who stands out in your mind? And, you know, one thing I talk about in workshops and why I still think it goes back to that inner voice is, you know, we continue to paint the subjects that have been painted for centuries.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the costumes have changed a bit, certainly, you know, fashion. But as far as the landscape, you know, we can all look at something. But what I'll do is I'll say, you know, you look at, say, the drawings of Egon Schiele. You take Egon Schiele, you take Sargent's charcoal drawings, you take Richard Diebenkorn's style or Modigliani,
mm-hmm.
Giorgio Morandi, four equally, in my mind, beautiful voices and interpretation of a figure. Nothing has changed about that subject matter except their interpretation. So I don't, you know, that's, it'll continue to fascinate me to see how people find, you know, individual voices come through the perennial subject matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it all boils down to your outlook on things, your
mm-hmm.
your voice.
Yeah,
that's what we need to nurture so much. Finding
mm-hmm.
that.
I can't stop painting the figure just because it's been painted so much.
Uh huh.
We can't. You can't stop painting, say, floral arrangements just because they've been painted for hundreds of years. It's they still excite some contemporary work today excites me as much as of this, you know, same subject matter as someone in the past. So again, it's that real individual take
mm-hmm.
on things. You know, Fairfield Porter's landscape, a little house compared to, say, a little Remington landscape or something like that. It's all just,
mm-hmm.
and the why there's room for everybody is there's so much versatility with each, you know, character of the line in drawing, color. You can either be, you know, maybe a subtle toneless with a little color, or you could go on like the Fauves. So, and you change all the recipes around. You know, you can say, okay, two values, limited palette, five shapes. You know, there's one recipe. And then you just switch it up a little. And then you switch it up by making, okay, one-third dark, two-thirds light. And then switch it up again. It just kind of limitless. So that's the way I try to approach it and think of it and for myself and for teaching.
That's amazing. That's a great way to look at it.
I have a question. When we say your name, we certainly, you know, you certainly have done a great job of getting your voice into your paintings. You have your unique style, which is your voice. But I'm just curious, have you ever, because I know you paint a lot, have you ever done something and went, oh, yeah, we've seen this before, and set it aside?
Maybe I don't quite understand the question, I think.
Okay. Well, if all of the people in the past that have painted a figure, let's just pick one, a girl wistfully looking, you know, dreaming, daydreaming out or whatever, that type of pose, if you will. Have you ever painted something, looked at it, and went, yeah, like we've seen this 1,000 times, and then do you go into let's switch this up a bit?
Yeah. I will, you know, one thing I'll never tire of is painting, you know, white and shadow. And I look at some of Sargent's figures and the fabulous costumes, the drapery, and then compared to Soroya's, there was so much white, so many light colors with he captured in shadow. And again, just a simple figure standing there, I don't think I can ever tire of it, ever. Just, for one thing, painting it from life is what gives me the main joy. And then just switching costumes again, I just don't think I could ever tire of that. Does that kind of answer that question?
Yeah, I think it goes more. I'm probably answering my own question, which isn't.
Are you more in like, I've done this so many times before, I need to move on?
Well, not so much you've done it so many times before, but it's been done. The subject itself has been done so many times. You happen to paint one that maybe looks a little bit too much like a sergeant, which I don't think you would do, but. And you just kind of, you know, switch it up. I think where the difference comes in, and I think what I'm getting at is that would probably be very hard for you to do because you're so in tune with your voice and the emotion that you want to bring out.
Well, I sure draw inspiration from many artists, but one thing I qualify my subject matter with is, I mean, my gosh, how many times have kids on the beach been painted over the hundreds of years, or, you know, once, especially with the plein air movement going. But I'm going, you know, this brings me so much joy. I'm not, just because it's done before doesn't mean it's off limits to me.
Right.
And I think there's some people who may think that way, but I'm going, I say it the way I say it, and I see it the way I see it, and as long as I'm in touch with that, and as long as I'm giving it my best shot, and as long as I'm just having a lot of fun and feeling passionate about it, nothing is off limits in my mind, even if it's been done a zillion times.
Yeah.
So... I say, go for it.
truthfully, you know, if I'm looking through the internet or, you know, Facebook or wherever, okay, and I'm seeing pictures or paintings done by folks. You know, there's a number of times where I'll go right past something because it may remind me of something an old master's done. And it's almost a copy, you know. There's nothing there that really grabs me. And I think the thing that comes out that ends up grabbing me is when a person, you can tell the person is in touch with their own voice versus just in that area where it may be technically correct and beautiful, but no voice.
That's okay. It's clear to me, your question. I certainly have that same emotion. I go, let's move on. Let's get over it.
You're there. You know what I'm talking about now.
Yes, I do. And I do have that emotion, especially if I'm going through, whether it's a magazine, you know, some of these current magazines and who's showing what and who's doing what. And I'll hear that myself going, God, enough already. And what else can you do? But again, I really don't feel I'm meant to judge that. I certainly can't deny that I have the emotion. Mm-hmm. And I do know enough about myself that I have to move from oils to watercolors to gouache to paint abstracts to you know, experimenting as a colorist, experimenting with limited palettes. That's just who I am. But I go, oh, God, they did another one of these? Jeez. I hear that. I go, oh, but I can't blame them if they're trying to make a living either. I really can't.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
But,
you know, you get into that, I don't want to call it a rut, but, you know, when you're in demand, and good for you, you know? So.
Yeah, and if you're making a living, great. And if you have inner peace with it, great. I don't know what I am. I'm just defiant or something, or not defiant. I just have to try it all.
Yeah.
Well, that's fun. That's
well,
great.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
I can see your inner voice in your paintings. I can see, I'm looking at your website.
Unusual
subject matter. I love
the bane of my existence, our website.
The little nail polishes, all the gorgeous colors, and your use of light and shadow is so dramatic.
That's another thing I learned in my inner voice is I love contrast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, many times I'll paint a subject because, say, the high-value contrast, or, for example, the yellow Cadillac, that was a relationship of colors I saw together. I was dying to mix. So there's different reasons to – I find different reasons to paint what I paint.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a different reason each time why something draws me in. So that's –
beautiful, just looking through all this.
Well, thank you.
Just amazing use of color here.
Well, we are actually coming down to very close to the end of the time that I asked you to set aside, Peggy. So what I wanted to do was give Blanche an opportunity to ask one last question. And then what we'll do is give Peggy an opportunity to talk about what she has coming up. So, Blanche?
I could ask quite a few questions, but one thing, I was looking at your website. I'd love to come to some of your workshops and also your DVDs. Can you tell us about those, how to get them? And
yes, I'd love to tell everyone.
those look so interesting to me.
You know, my DVDs I have fashioned just right after my workshops. I was getting so many requests of, oh, when are you going to do a DVD? And, gosh, everyone, you know, I was looking around and kind of watching DVDs a lot of these people, and people I really admire, but the DVDs were like 2 and 3 hours long, and I'd like, oh, God, I can't get through this. And I've forgotten what we talked about in the beginning by the time I get to the end. And I'm going, you know, and I just said to my husband, Ray, I said, you know what, I am going to do these just the way I teach. And that is, when I walk into a workshop, I explain to everybody, I'm a very exercise-oriented person. I believe it escalates the learning. I believe it's easier to grasp, and you get there a little faster with more mileage. So I created half hour. They're anywhere from 30 to 40 minutes. One idea at a time. Let's just work on this now. Let's just work on this. So I ended up creating 18 lessons, and they've been really successful, I'm so happy to say. Anyway, you can order them off my website, which is KrollRoberts.com, and I have a DVD page, but that's how they came about. I just struggled with, how am I going to do this? I'm going to do them just like I do my workshops.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had a really wonderful response to it.
Well, these are great. There's so many here. You can work on this a long time. This is wonderful. And you can
we did six per year. So, and we had a young guy from the TV station, our local public station, help us, who was just wonderful, Brandon Town. And we shot him in our own studio. And I planned him out. I'd, you know, kind of rehearse it myself. I'd plan it all myself, paint it in the beginning. And so it went very smoothly. And I just kind of focused on kind of six, getting out six a year, sort of a lesson plan.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how that worked and came about.
Well, these look great. This looks like what I want to do.
I think you sold another DVD.
Yeah, well,
one here on
you
the
know,
palette
it's,
knife painting.
What's that?
Oh, I was telling Linda there's one on palette knife painting. I see.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Cool. So maybe you sold two DVDs tonight.
I had a lot of fun doing them, and
good.
I'm very proud of them.
Well, I appreciate your taking the time to do all of this. This looks like a huge undertaking.
Yeah, it was, but it was fun, and I learned a lot about myself, and it reinforced my teaching method.
Mhm.
And that's always important too. So,
it
scares a lot of people, teaching does, but it's one of these things where you really have to understand what you're going to teach, and it really makes you a stronger painter.
Yeah, I think what helped people too is I think the exercises are educational as well as fun, and I think it help them get over. No, I just want to get right to, I want a painting to take home. I just want to. But when they saw the results of just maybe a simple, really simple value plan with color applied to that, they weren't so resistant to going back to the beginning fundamentals. Like, oh, do we have to paint in value? Well, it's going to be fun. You'll see. You know,
yeah.
A lot of people had never painted value plans. They just started their journey right with color.
Mm-hmm.
And it made them less resistant to go back to the beginning fundamentals, I found.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a great idea, a great gift that you've done that.
Oh, well, thank you.
And Peggy, what else do you have coming up? That is there someplace where we can see your work besides your website in person?
Oh, boy. Well, you know what? I've just started my own blog, and it's kind of a journey through all my little projects and whatever I'm doing next. And, And if I'm feeling, you know, ADD, I'll go do this. And so it's just kind of a journey of what's on my plate each week, or maybe I've just gotten back from a workshop. So that's, do you want that address?
Yes, we do.
Okay, that's KrollRobertsStudio.blogspot.com. So I'm working on that pretty regularly. Then I'm going to be teaching at the Scottsdale Artist School in November. And I've got other workshops coming up for the year, shows. I just finished a show with the Knowlton Gallery, her bouquets and garden, and I did really well with that, so I was pleased about that. And just working on whatever's next.
Good. Well, I'll be interested. I'm going to go out and visit your blog for sure, so see what you've been up to and reading that.
Yeah.
So I can't wait to do that. So.
Oh, good.
I'm talking to another blogger as well, so I have a lot of different blogs that I end up contributing to. So
I know some of these blogs are just there's a couple interior decorating blogs that I just have to go to every day. They're so fun, and my house certainly doesn't look like I've had an interior decorator out, but I still love it. So
just a lot of fun.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, there's a lot of exciting art blogs out there, and I'm having fun with it.
Good. We're coming short down on time, and I just wanted to, again, Peggy, thank you so much for being here. I hope that our listeners got a lot of great advice from you this evening, and thank you for being so generous with that and talking
well,
to us.
I am so grateful and appreciative that you asked me to participate in this. I appreciate it.
Well, oh, we're honored. Thank you so much. We appreciate
it. Yeah, the pleasure and the honor is ours. Oh, absolutely. So with that, we're going to go ahead and say good night for the evening. Our next show will be in November. I've been pre-recording shows, so I don't even know what month it is half the time. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Again, thank you, Peggy, for being here, and we'll catch up with everybody in November. So have
thank
some
you.
Happy evening time. Yeah, thank
okay,
you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Good night, everyone. Bye.
Good night.